episode 635, for July 14th, 2020. While Dragons Claim the Sky, Part 1, by Jen Brown. Rated PG.
Welcome to Podcastle. I'm Amelia Harrington. I'm an associate editor at Podcastle, as well as an acquiring editor at FIA. I'm on Twitter at Amelia Writes, and my latest work can be found in Anathema Magazine and the Decoded Anthology. Growing up, my hair was a thing to be battled, not celebrated. I wasn't trusted to handle it myself, and grown-ups often played tug-of-war with my scalp. My curly halo was an offense to be flattened out of existence with sprays, gel, and straightening products. It's validating to read a piece where curly and kinky hair is a source of strength, and mind-blowing how hairstyling doesn't hurt the recipient. Podcastle is very proud to present While Dragons Claim the Sky, written by Jennifer Brown, originally published in FIA Magazine's Hair Issue, number 10, April 2019. Today's story was written by Jennifer Brown. She is a queer, black SFF writer and college librarian. When not working on stories or helping undergrads, she's either playing visual novels and or tactical RPGs, watering an impressive collection of houseplants, or desperately tackling her to-be-read pile. Your reader today is Sheree Clark, who graduated from Indiana University's Creative Writing MFA. She's been a personal trainer, an English teacher, and an editor, and is some combination thereof as she travels the world. When she's not writing or working, she's learning languages, doing P90-something, or reading about war and post-colonial history. Her work has also appeared or is forthcoming in FIA and Uncanny. You can follow her on Twitter at C_L_Clark. Grab your breakproof comb and your traveling boots and enjoy the story.
While Dragons Claim the Sky, by Jen Brown. Read for you by C.L. Clark. When a breeze shook the reed curtains in Mama's salon, I thought it might be another dragon gliding low, stopping to drink from Lake Matrill. Of course, Mama and I weren't afraid. We loved watching them soar overhead, wings gusting hard enough to free cotton fibers and coffee cherries across Gurexian farms so that croppers only had to scoop them up. So, you can imagine my disappointment when it wasn't a dragon aloft, but a lanky huntress pushing into Mama's parlor. She burst through our straw door, letting in the noon sound of Gurexians haggling over pouches in the nearby spice house, testing winter tunics in the adjacent tailor's gallery. But this wasn't any old villager, like the rest of them. Her wolf pelt cloak, engraved walking staff, and curved daggers marked her as a traveler. And instead of looking journey-weary, her umber skin practically glowed beneath the gauzy afternoon light. "Dragon's ass," she exclaimed, lilting accent stretching the vowels. "And I thought I wouldn't find another black quaff mage before I hit the goblin fairies." Mama couldn't hear anything while her sight was up. She was busy slicking greased fingers through Amaktu's locks, plying the hidden gossamer magics that only us mages could materialize, to try and loosen the old woman's phlegm. A few quick blinks sealed away her powers, returning sound and touch in every other sense that sight dampened. "What did you say?" Mama asked. "I'm looking to get handful twists, the long, chunky kind." Pressing inside, the girl flung cold and snow and mud across our best mats. "The signpost says you specialize in healing quaffery, yeah? I've got a bad back that needs tending before I leave tonight. Do you take walk-ins?" "Omani and I take payment for services offered." Mama flicked her head in my direction. "Black opal, bonitoite, copper stones. Even upland banknotes, if you have them." Her lips flattened into an unimpressed line. "But I'll bet you haven't so much as a pebble on you, little girl." "Little?" The huntress snorted. "My 18th name day just passed, ma'am." Then you've adult currency, girl. She frowned, chin stabbing upward. I will soon enough. I knew it. Mama motioned her away. Out. I hardly cared about the argument brewing. Instead, I was nestled on one of the salon's colorful divans, neglecting all of my responsibilities, cleaning the wash basins, beating our yarn-dyed throws so that waiting clients would go, oh, how soft, to reread a letter delivered via messenger raven last week. From Mistress Carolyn Ames, Department Chair, Coif Majory, Imperial College of Allied Mages. 2. Omani Sudiha of the Grixian Underland. Upon reviewing your application, I found your provincial use of Wish Majory an interesting method for the study of hair magics. Therefore, I am pleased to offer you admission. Now, hold it, ma'am. The Huntress backpedaled. I can pay you easily in 3 days' time. While Mama and Amaktu fell out with laughter, I shimmied deeper into the divan, swathing myself in daydreams of meeting Ames, seeing the college's campus. My imagination fissured around the letter's last line. At your earliest convenience, have your sponsor contact the bursar's office to arrange payment for full term. Only a fool would apply to the Empire's oldest department of coif majory under a professor who'd pioneered hair magics for 30-odd years without having any idea how to pay for it. Yet, that's exactly what I'd done. I'm serious, the huntress barked, loud enough to draw my gaze. As a finalist in the Dragonscale Melees, I'm this close to becoming an Imperial Knightess. My winnings would be large enough to pay back your kindness twice over. My next breath stuttered. Wait, I cut in, sitting up. The melee in Ikrave? Visiting merchers often spun tales of a biennial 3-day brawl in the floating uplands, one that covered the Imperial College's outdoor amphitheater and white tents, while competitors sparred in gleaming armaments, competitors who often traveled with groups of tailors and smithies and page boys. Could this melee be one and the same? Yeah, the girl replied. I've got the summons to prove it. Bolting upright, I practically toppled a stool near my legs. I'll do your hair, I blurted, choking Mama and Amaku's side chatter off. If you'll take me on retainer as your personal coif mate during the melee. Everything went eerily quiet as Mama's bone comb cracked to the floor. I abandoned the divan, rounding styling shelves and low tables to plead my case before the would-be knightess. After all, I'd wished for this. I'd cast my want into the hidden magics netting our world, hoping a tuition-sized miracle might appear. And bumping into a huntress on our way to the Empire's largest tourney, who, if victorious, would receive an audience with the Empress and her favor all at once? That's how mages won Imperial College scholarships. Omani, what foolishness are you on about? Mama demanded. You would make for Ikrove now, while your Nanu lies sick upstairs. Her gold lip stud trembled. Cowrie braids clanked as she shook her head. You would leave us behind. Heat flared my neck. Nanu was dying, and from a malady nobody understood. It couldn't have been age, because that simply thinned her coiled tresses and creased her complexion, making prunes of her dimpled cheeks. No, this death stole her from us memory by memory, made her gurgle wetly as she forgot our faces. Gods, I didn't want to leave either of them. I know the timing's bad, but... Loosing a long, slow breath, I handed Mama my acceptance letter. I got in. Her thick brows only crumpled as she read the parchment. I got into the Imperial College, and if I'm to accept, I need a patron who will cover my yearly tuition. You know who awards at least 3 incoming mages with Imperial College scholarships? The Empress herself. This time, Mama's laughter pitched high. and made her stagger and clutch a Maktu for support before shifting into fury. You think I took on Zarb's cropping so that you could abandon us? Mama Beryl toward me then. Mani, I do it so you don't have to, so that you can keep our majory alive here. Well, maybe I want to make it so you don't have to crop, I yelled. Mama stopped, reeling like I'd struck her, and my whole body trembled as the truth rushed free. As if I needed reminding that Papa was gone, the evidence was all around us. After he passed, Ma took up his cropping rotations to cover our debts. Coffee, cotton, all Gorexi's best-known exports. I hated that she picked year-round, only to send half her haul to the Cloud Fairies for upland distribution. Attending the college would mean graduating alongside nobility, I reasoned, slicing the silence with calmer tones. And I'd make good money doing upland heads with my wish majory. Every stone could help buy back our lands. Mama threw up her hands. Worrying about finances is my job, Mani. Yours is not to lie like you have. She slumped, tiredness etching itself into her slackening expression. How could you keep all of this from me? Movement prickled the edge of my vision. I caught the huntress glaring between us, backing away as if she regretted stumbling in at all. Stay, I barked at her. Ma, please. No. Her gaze turned glassy. You want to go? Fine. Go ahead. Join your new friend. Honor your ridiculous contract. I haven't agreed to anything, the huntress bellowed. But don't you dare come back here after it all blows up in your face. Backpedaling, I fought the angry comebacks, scrabbling at my throat. I could tell she meant every word from the way she clutched her arms, like she was already getting used to holding herself up without me. Guess I'd have to learn to do the same. Night is hopeful. Don't cry, I commanded myself. Don't. It's Myra, the girl replied. She'd been halfway out the door before Mama's ultimatum, but lingered now, fingers playing at the mosaic tapestry on her left. Myra, then. I gripped my hands till the nail beds whitened. Look, I'm the best coif mage you'll find in Grixi. I've mastered healing coiffery, and I even made up a new kind of majory when scalp divination and strand summoning didn't suit me. Myra edged back inside, trailing her guarded gaze along the length of me. Then your coif majory molds your wildest wishes into the fabric of our world so they might come to life. A smirk plumped her dark cheeks, sharpened her now expectant gaze. Behind us, Maktu started coughing anew. Mama went to comfort her, but the din of it all sounded far away. Take me on retainer, but keep your winnings, I continued. In return, I'll twist wishes into your hair every day of the melee. Just give me a chance to make my wish a reality. That night, I feigned strength as we rode out beneath a gloomy half-moon. As Grixie's farmhouses, quiet windmills, and wending streams faded behind us. Once we hit Hannonfall and our neighboring realms' tarped night markets came into view, Myra slowed us to a trot to clear the bazaar's throng. That's when I spied the fire lamp glow of Madame Ellery's coif menagerie haloing the darkness, where Papa had gifted me an unbreakable bone comb. At 9, all stubby-legged and squat, I could barely reach heads for styling. Mama had gazed on excitedly anyway, proud to have a real Ellery piece in our salon's collection. Now it jangled inside my rucksack, bumping grease tins and iron clips to the tune of my facade, fraying at the seams. A miserable sob shuddered free of my throat at the memory. Nope. None of that. Myra loosened her hold on the reins to squeeze my arm. Look, I get it. leaving after a fight would chafe anyone's ass. But you better ready yourself with whatever strength you've got left. Clicking her tongue, she spurred her mare into a gallop so that we'd make the last departing Cloud Fairy. We've got a melee to win and dreams to earn. Your ma'll come around. I didn't exactly feel better, but she was right. Sucking tears from my lips, I focused on everything but memories of home. My cramped thighs clinging to our horse, Myra's smooth staff resting against my lap, the tang of anti-inflammatory salve wafting through her furs. We rounded Hunnenfuls bordering slaughterhouses. Hours later, the breathlessness of Venara's hulking cloud fairies rose into view as we entered the last southern realm I'd see before taking flight. My sense of splendor quickly disappeared after it took every stone I'd saved to board. Which came after Myra negotiated the AV mage captain's asking price down and threw in her horse for good measure. Come on now, friend. Who's trying to fly with all these dragons about? She winked, further wrinkling his bearded glower. Might as well cut your losses and get what you can, because these docks seem pretty damn empty tonight. Mama said only birds were meant to fly, so I held my breath when we pushed off, until Vanar and Hannonful and Grexi and every other little underland realm disappeared below dense clouds. It was win or beg our way back home. Abyss below, I should have asked Myra to do a backflip or a blade toss or something to prove she could fight. Still, she had enough bravado for us both. Now, Myra said, swaggering into our modest cabin below deck, let's hope you're half as good as you claim. I still wish I'd begged Kelleran to do my hair before leaving. I couldn't decide whether I admired her caution or found it annoying. Kelleran? I began unpacking my styling tools atop a rickety writing desk. My sister. Myra unfurled herself across our straw bed, long limbs dangling over the side. She does healing coiffure like your ma, which means I know my way around coif mages. I'll know if you're playing me false. Annoying, then. Definitely annoying. Will you now? I tried to clear the acid from my voice. Why didn't you beg Kelleran, then? Because. Myra canted her head defiantly. She took up fighting Kelhane's wolf wraiths in my stead. Oh. Iron hair clips fell through my fingers, pelting the writing desk awkwardly. I don't remember how old I was during Garexi's last wraith massacre. I just know I'd never been more frightened than when Mama clutched me close, her breath lancing hotly against my ear while villagers called outside for aid. Don't let them in, no matter what skin they're wearing, she begged before going into the darkness with Papa. They left me trembling in Nana's room with a torch bigger than my torso, so that I could burn wraiths out in case everyone else failed. Now Myra's sister would exchange bone combs for obsidian blades and magicked arrows to keep them at bay. I'm sorry, I whispered. Why? Myra challenged, rearing up onto her elbows. Dad taught Rin to wield the knife too, same as any kill huntress. Something jagged caught Myra's tone, deflating her bravado to a paltry simmer. And she's in good company. She'll travel with the last hunters Meridian trained before she... Myra hesitated, eyes widening. Nothing. Before nothing. Oh. Oh, God. Wait, don't tell me Kel's realm dragon left too? Would this kick off a second wave of the so-called dragon exodus? The first had come like a torrent, with droves of them taking flight after failed negotiations at the Empress's imperial summit. Upland pamphleteers reported that the dragons were heading east, claiming faraway crag wilds to build army hordes, that they'd come back and burn every city if we didn't stop them. Of course, that was the stupidest thing I'd ever heard. Upland realms knew nothing of dragons, or their thousand-year-long relationships with underland village families. Ugh, Myra mumbled into the bedsheets. Me and the other hunters promised we'd keep it secret for long as we could. She flipped over onto her back, eyes far away. Miri traveled by ground during the day so her arsehole's majesty's airships wouldn't catch her flying. Grixie wasn't big enough to boast its own realm dragon, so with Kelhane being so close, Meridian felt like family too. I'd often race to watch her soar overhead in the spring, scaly form carving the clouds. "Is that why you want to become a knightess?" I asked, but Myra's expression stiffened around a stony glare. I guess letting me in wasn't part of the deal. "Okay, then, let's get to your hair." I steered the conversation back into comfortable territory. "Now, you might know regular coiffmagery, but wish styling is about binding what we most desire into the tapestry of magic itself. You know about the site." Myra rose, flinging off her furs. "Sis says it's like looking at cobwebs or something." "Exactly. Mage sight exposes the raw webbings of magic that overlay our world." Setting a chair beneath the cabin's only window, I gathered blankets to create a makeshift styling cape. "Now, you just need to focus on your wish. Think it, speak it, doesn't matter." I made Myra sit and began dampening her loose coils. "The rest is my job. Binding it so magical rearrange the universe to make it true." "It can't possibly be that simple," Myra sputtered. "What if I wish for the world to end? Or to raise the dead?" I winced. Dark memories from moons prior roiled to the fore. My chubby knees pressed into the salon's floor as I raked magics through my hair. I wished for Papa to come back so he would pepper us with scratchy kisses. Demanded that the universe reverse time, pump blood through his heart again. I cursed a Maktu for delivering the news, for telling us he dropped mid-cropping. "There are things magic just can't do." Breathing through the rawness aching my chest, I changed the subject. "Anyway, you got nefarious plans I don't know about?" "Maybe." Myra wiggled her eyebrows. "Kidding, kidding." Her tone shifted, turning husky. "Well, I don't fight good when I'm worried, so I wish for Rin's safety." Surprise clotted in me, stilling my hands. Myra could have wished for anything. Strength, speed, agility during the melee's battles. Clearly, I wasn't the only one aching for home, and I suddenly didn't feel weak for doing so. "All right." Loosing a breath, I squinted till the world turned fuzzy, then paused, waited until the fairy's creaking hull faded, until I couldn't feel the softness of Myra's curls in my hands, until all sense, except sight, fled me. My next breath rippled a gleaming sliver of webbing nearby, which brought another thread into view, and another, until the whole cabin was sketched over with fibers of magical essence, just waiting to be molded. I tapped Myra's shoulder, signaling her to focus on her wish. When she spoke, the threads crossing her hair undulated. I worked quickly to form medium-sized hand-in-full twists, though we stopped twice so Myra could stand and stretch, making the threads cascade down her back like strung stars. Eventually, I wove the magics through each twist, creating a corded lattice that made her hair shimmer, By the time I reached the front section, even her lashes were aglow, like some woodland fay from the stories, angular cheeks and wide nose bathed in light. But, like always, my sight exacted its toll. Nearby magics began writhing while I worked, tendrils undulating wildly before stabbing into my skin. As thin rivulets of blood welled up from the cylindrical wounds, I snipped the base of each by pinching them with my nails. Mama taught me, never cut them low. The leftover bits eventually settled beneath your scabs, but I learned early on to work fast, which also meant hitting my favorite part sooner, gathering the magic. Once Myra's twists were finished, I mouthed, "To me." Churning, the threads unlatched themselves from her twists, coiling into a yarn-like ball that hovered atop my left hand. "Make it so." They scattered, crawling across the room's magics with renewed purpose. Work done, I softened my gaze, watching the webbing trickle away until feeling crept back into my hands. Sound and taste and smell flooded into me once more.
Guessing this isn't an instantaneous kind of thing?
Myra teased, stretching as she stood.
Not exactly, I laughed woozily. Sight work always left me drained. Give it time.
With the horizon still blue-black, we had hours to go before reaching Ikreve. But, as I cleaned up, Myra's calloused hand caught mine. Thanks, Omani. Heat bloomed where she touched me, the same spot Micaiah, the tailor's son, pressed a kiss to last summer. A similar feeling torched my core.
None's needed. I'm your retainer, right?
Holding my gaze, Myra surprised me by tearing some of her tunic to wrap my sight wounds. Some stung worse, having reopened previously healed scars.
Dad thinks knights are pompous and stupid.
Myra's jaw twitched as she wound cloth about me. He doesn't get what it'd mean for Kel to have a real knightess, even though Murray's gone. He said if I left, it'd be as good as killing Rin myself. Her hands lingered, even though my bandages were secure. I want to become a knightess so I can help our people. We stood there, with our hands clasped. Nothing to return to, everything to lose.
And I can do that a little easier, even with my back, knowing she might survive the week.
Myra grinned, a real smile this time, unguarded and brilliant. Thank you for that. And for, you know, tagging along. I haven't, traveled like this with anyone since Murray left. I returned her grin, but mine was a flimsy, strained thing. Why didn't I feel brilliant and brave and unguarded, too? I wondered about this long after Myra climbed into bed, tired eyes watching the inky horizon out our keyhole window. Thoughts of Mama came to me then. Of our roasted yams and belly-splitting jokes, of the way her summer sundresses caught the light, or how she stretched onto her tippy-toes to plait braids into my crown, even when her back ached from picking. Of how I hadn't looked back when she watched us ride away beneath the murk. Of how she was probably watching Nanu right now, in case she woke confused or tried to wander off. Shame boiled hot in me, since we used to take turns protecting her. Who'd change places with Mama now? Who'd make sure she slept and ate while Nanu wasted away? My worries bled into something with claws, rooting deep until the marrow of me felt raked through. Those worries only worsened with the sunrise. Soon, daylight flooded the horizon, revealing landmasses. Dozens. Ahead, upland realms jutted against the skyline.
They loomed like gilt behemoths, casts in grandiose shades of bronze and azure, tops aglow with sprawling cities. Spiral towers needled into thin, pristine points, while bulbous temple domes reflected a patchwork of mosaic artistry. I traced granite roads, bisecting the land like arteries, to waterfalls spilling over the world's edge, where their stalactite bottoms knifed into the clouds below, blotting out the underlands beneath. The next morning, Myra woke in agony, back aflame as we skirted Ecrevé's crowded port with nothing but walking sticks for balance. Jitters knotted my insides as we avoided throngs of bird fishermen, grumbly merchants, and eager tourists, all of which only heightened the coiled tension of watching her struggle. "At least let me help." I rounded her other side, but Myra shooed me off. "Stop fretting, keep up. We gotta book it. Ferry dock later than I'd hoped." We trudged the city's cobblestoned streets, rounding obsidian spires where timber mages shifted winter's chill into manufactured humidity. It might have been nice, if we weren't sweating and stinking through our furs near gilt parliamentary temples, or needing to cool our damp cheeks against the Imperial History Museum's marble colonnades. To make matters worse, Myra's staff kept slipping on the stones, skidding her into stagecoaches cluttering the street. She refused my help yet again as we passed towering emporiums, where Grixian salt mix went for twice the banknotes they did back home, and veered from the spray of merchers beating skydew out of their fabric wares. We spent 50 minutes wandering, lost and sore-footed, along avenues where ruddy kids played around aqueducts plunging off the city's edge, before finally discovering the Imperial College's campus. "Mele will be up there." Ditching her staff, Myra pointed out a distant amphitheater that loomed between brick-topped departmental buildings and a massive belfry. "You ready?" I could hardly see Myra past my worries, let alone respond, so I followed as she hobbled along manicured gravel walkways, smothering an impulse to retrieve her stick while battling darker thoughts. Could Myra win while in such pain? Yesterday, she was all flair and cockiness, believing our destinies within reach. Now, I wasn't so sure. Doubt dogged the minutes we spent walking toward the theater's entryway, and I barely caught my breath before an attendant spotted us.
"Competitors, both of you?" the robed usher asked. "This way."
Sweeping inside, my stomach knotted upon seeing so many sky folk filling the stand. Wig-clad men puffing thick cigars, little girls garbed in chainmail, peering through binoculars to spy the fighters below. Myra elbowed me just as we rounded the theater's circular stage.
"Look, the asshole of the hour."
I followed Myra's gaze. Downstage, a grave-faced woman surveyed the grounds from a painted dais, flanked by royal guard. That could only mean one thing. Empress Troxrin would preside over the melee herself.
"Does she usually call these matches?"
I asked. "Not this early," Myra whispered. The attendant led us into a rear preparatory tent, handed Myra a placard identifying her opponent, and warned that the melee would begin in minutes. She flung herself behind a screen to change. "She's only supposed to show up on the final day. Tonight, the winner." Gods. Which meant now, the Empress might see Myra lose early, might narrow those beady eyes, easily forgetting the underland girls who'd given up everything to be here. Clammy and cold, I coughed around the stench of competitors dressing and smoking nearby.
Maybe we should style your twists again, real fast?
Drawing closer to the screen, I whispered, "You could wish away your pain." A kind of thick, strained silence met my words, leaving me space to really hear what I just said. Gods, I wanted to snatch the words back with my bare hands, but my fingers felt like claws, monstrous, gnashing things that had shorn away my mama and Nanu and now Myra. Look, I only meant... Oh, I know exactly what you meant. Myra came out from behind her screen, clad in dazzling armor, richly dyed leather accented with a placard and greaves made of interwoven iron that mimicked dragon scales. My ribcage thudded as I took her in, a real dragoness, towering and lithe, poised for flight. Abyss below, this was one hell of a mistake, Myra muttered. Her forehead smoothed, shifting what had been a taut grimace into something serene. Go home, Amani. Her tone was soft, yet cutting. A broadsword piercing silk, like a final sundering of something that was once whole. What? I stammered. Your services are no longer needed, Myra replied. After fastening her knives, she turned to join the other melee competitors who'd begun lining up. Should have known you weren't strong enough to see this through. A million little things occurred all at once. Competitors took the marble stage to the sound of opening trumpets. I called out to Myra, but ear-splitting crowd roar swallowed the words whole. Pitching backward, I knocked into platters of wine and cheese, while ushers and tailors and press pamphleteers and sky peoples frowned at the sight of tears carving my cheeks. I'd ruined everything. So I ran from the theater, plunging downhill as the melee's host, Duke something or other, announced Myra's opponent, Vera the Thrasher, a pale tree trunk of a woman from the underlands below Ikrave, who probably believed victory her birthright. The crowd's applause faded as I scraped past manicured quadrangles and ivy-coated libraries. By the time I stopped, rucksack clanking and chest heaving, I was all sweat and snot, ashamed of myself for doubting the one person who believed in me, afraid of slinking home to Mama and watching her crop until she collapsed like Papa. If she'd even take me back in. I was so absorbed, I didn't catch the alchemist who'd stopped before me. He had a kind, round face, and carefully balanced a chemical tray full of beakers and vials against his crisp student robes.
Got your midterms back, eh?
I know that feeling, he said, sounding upland proper. Lifting a knee, he rebalanced his samples. Don't worry, gets easier after your first term. It felt worse being mistaken for an actual student. I'm not...
You know, why don't you chat up your advisor?
He leaned in close enough for me to count the freckles splashing his cheeks. They want you to think you can't argue a great, but you always can.
What's your department?
Department. Like gears whirring into motion, that word planted the seeds of a plan into my addled mind.
Quaff majory.
Well, strike that, he laughed. Professor Ames is known for being a hard ass. Reeling, I remembered my offer letter, recalled the way Professor Carolyn Ames signed her name to it.
Where can I find her?
The boy frowned.
Hasn't physical magic always been in Kent Hall, behind the clock tower?
I left him there, looking utterly perplexed, but was firmly set on my plan. Find Professor Ames, impress her, regale her, do whatever I needed to win her interest. Then, plumb her for ideas about possible sponsors. Wealthy sky folk she might know. Gods, she had to know some, right? College faculty were practically nobles themselves. And, if I was brave enough to keep fighting in my own way, then I was strong enough to find Myra later, to apologize for everything and pull my own weight, to rally her and trust myself, trust us both, like I should have all along. I raced toward Kent Hall, pushing through the department's heavy oak doors, wincing beneath the overbright feel of hallways humming with electric light, poked into empty lecture halls, and scanned wall signs until I found her office placard, written in the same flourished hand from my acceptance letter. Department Chair Carolyn Ames. Unfortunately, her door was slightly ajar, which meant my creeping steps swayed it with a nasty creak.
Who's there?
she called. Her boots echoed as she whipped the door back, revealing crimson professorial robes and a stern face pockmarked with recent side scabs. Uniform layered scars hid beneath them, resembling sharpened scythes.
"Professor Ames!" I croaked, throat dry. "Hi!"
Her lips pinched as she took in my sweating, disheveled form.
"Are you here for office hours?"
"Not exactly."
Chewing my tongue, I dug through my rucksack before retrieving and extending her my offer letter. After skimming it briefly, she arched one perfectly shaped eyebrow.
"Ah, yes. The Underlands talent. I remember your application."
She swept graying bangs from her eyes as if to see me better.
"Perspectives usually come begging to get in, but you've already done that."
"So why are you here?" her tone implied.
God, I had to choose my words carefully. Twisting the edge of my traveling cloak between tingling fingers, I stuttered, I came here to win patronage from the Empress." Her narrowing eyes only worsened my stumbling speech. I was working as a personal coif mage for one of her melee competitors."
Professor Ames chuckled sharply, mouth agape.
"And when that unlikely plan fails, as it already seems to have, since your coif work is a past tense activity..."
He crawled my ears, dulling sound so that I had to flatten my tongue to feel the press of every syllable thudding out. "Then I'd like to discuss other options, mistress, to prove that I'm worth investing in, to whoever will have me." Perfect brow lowering, she returned my letter, swept keen emerald eyes over me.
"Meet me here tomorrow around 9, before morning lecture. I promise nothing but coffee and a chat. Let's see what you take from it, shall we?"
The door creaked shut before I could respond.
And welcome back. Whew, I've been there. This one adult will determine the rest of your life. Don't you dare mess up. I really don't miss those days. That was our show for this week. On behalf of everyone at Podcastle, thanks for letting us share another story with you. Be sure to share it with your friends, hit us up on social media, and if you'd like to show some extra love, head to patreon.com/EAPodcast for special events, bonus episodes, and Podcastle appearances in the wild. We'll be back next week with the second half. Until then, this is Amelia, reminding you, curly, kinky hair isn't yucky, but powerful.